This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, the 7th of October was this year's World Fungus Day. Yeah, completely passed me by, and it probably did you too, and probably most other people, which is a shame. Because as the British Mycological Society warns us, without the recycling activities of fungi, the world's ecosystems would soon run out of nutrients. Plants without their fungal mycorrhizal partners to deliver water and nutrients wouldn't be able to grow, and trees and plants would quickly fail and die. Now, it's true, some fungi are also pathogens causing disease and death in, well, not just us, but in other animals and plants too, and they can even poison us. However, there's really not many fungi that actually cause a nuisance to a healthy person. And without fungi, animals and plants couldn't and wouldn't exist. So, we're all absolutely dependent on fungi, most of the time without even realising it. For most of the year, we're oblivious to the fact that there are fungi all around us, in the soil, in woods, in lawns, in leaf litter. Then just as summer closes and flowers are becoming scarce in the warm, damp days of autumn, fungi send out their fruiting bodies to bewitch us. And when I mentioned to my daughter that I was going to be talking about fungi this week, she was immediately interested. And I think a lot of us do find something rather magical about these mysterious organisms. And with names like the common stinkhorn, hot lips disco, wolf's milk slime mold, the silky piggyback, I'm not making any of these up, or the excruciating sounding cramp balls, it's not surprising. So let's find out more from Chloe Valerie Harmsworth, wildlife author and the business manager at Hearts Environmental Records Centre for the Hearts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust. Chloe, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. So I just wondered what you thought about why we attach this air of magic and mystery to fungi.
I think there's lots of reasons, but I imagine for many of us, it comes from our childhood. Certainly, I can remember a lot of stories that I read or had read to me that involved fairies and little creatures and little animals. And I think, you know, when you look at the picture books, you know, you'd get a lot of sweet images of them interacting with mushrooms. And you've got Alice in Wonderland with the caterpillar on the mushroom. So I imagine it's things like that.
Yeah, and they're very visually appealing as well, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. I think they're probably the best thing about autumn, and they have made me love autumn as a season even more than, you know, the beautiful colours of the leaves on the trees. And I like to go out for regular fungi forays, like a little treasure hunt.
Yes, exactly. Treasure hunt. So can you just explain to us how fungi work? Because that beautiful bit that we see, that's not really the fungi, is it? That's just a bit of it.
Yeah, technically, that's the fruit of the fungi. So you've got the mycelium or mycelium, depending how you want to pronounce it. That's a sort of network of roots, essentially, underground. That's a really simplistic, non-scientific way of explaining it. But they connect, you know, and they're taking nutrients from the soil. They're helping to break down dead wood, decomposing animals, things like that. And they're also releasing more nutrients into soil, which they've gained from breaking those things down. And they're connected to other plants and trees, and they connect trees to each other, and they share nutrients between them. So they'll get sugars from the tree that the tree can make through photosynthesis. And it will give phosphorus and nitrogen and things like that back to the tree. So there's like a mutual beneficial relationship going on. And yeah, the actual, what we call fungi, what we see, is essentially their fruit, because mushrooms will release their spores so that they can then hopefully, you know, filter out to a different area and then build up that mycelium again underground and spread.
So just heard how the British Mycological Society reckoned that without fungi, we wouldn't exist. But I just wondered how important fungi are to the natural world. I mean, from what you said there, it sounds like they're pretty crucial.
Very much so. Everything's important in the ecosystem, but I would say fungi especially, because they're doing that release of nutrients and keeping our trees healthy. But also wildlife will nibble on them. Biagarics, beautiful, magical fairytale mushrooms, the one that everyone thinks of when they think of fungi, I would say. And I love going out each year looking for them. But it's very rare I'll find one that's not being nibbled by a squirrel or a deer, probably, and slugs and things like that. So especially like slugs and things, that's then food for birds. And then you just go up the food chain. So it's so important, not just for the health of the soil, which helps other plants, but for the other wildlife species as well.
So, as you said, it's a lovely time of year to be out for a woodland walk. Some children off school for half term, or actually, it's just nice to be out, isn't it? Enjoying the autumn sights and smells. So can you recommend to us any particularly good places where we could go and look for fungi ourselves?
I would recommend trying your local woodlands in the first instance, because I'm so passionate about forming relationships with woodlands and going there throughout the year. But I do actually now work for Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, or the Environmental Record Centre. So I have this wonderful thing that I can find out through our systems where different mushrooms are. So in the blog that I recently wrote, I've talked about quite a few, and Gobion's Wood's amazing. It's got such a huge number of fungi there, so you can't really go wrong with that. That's in Potter's Bar. And then you've got Astonbury Wood, which the Trust recently took on. That's got lots of amazing things. And then I would definitely, I mean, you're going to have something at any of our reserves. The different environments will give you different mushrooms, you know, whether it's a woodland or a grassland, you're going to find different things. Like grasslands, you're going to find more the wax caps, which are very exciting. And I would also recommend Pang's Hanger Park. That's a brilliant place for fungi as well, but try any of our reserves and any woodlands near you and you're bound to find something.
Okay, so we just have to get out there and look for them. So you mentioned your blog. Let's talk about a few of the interesting fungi that you mentioned there. Now, you started off with an absolute beauty, the Amethyst Deceiver. Just tell us a little bit about that one.
Oh, that's such a gorgeous jewel of a mushroom. It's this tiny little purple mushroom. By the way, I'm going to use the words mushroom and fungi interchangeably, even though technically, yeah, you know, it's maybe not exactly correct. But yes, the Amethyst Deceiver is tiny, and you just have to really get down into the moss, into the leaf litter, into the grass sometimes. I found them there as well. Get down and look at the eye level of the mushrooms, and you'll be amazed at the things that you didn't see from the height of standing. Amethyst Deceivers, they can appear as part of a small troop of other ones, especially in wet areas, and they are often associated with beech and birch trees. And the reason it's called the Deceiver is because although it starts off really beautifully vibrant violet in colour, that fades with age, and once that happens it makes it very difficult to identify. But yeah, it's a stunning little thing.
It does look like something that the fairies have left, doesn't it? That beautiful colour. Another one which is a beautiful colour is the orange peel fungus, which I think is named for obvious reasons. How about a little bit about that one? Very different.
Oh yeah, that's funny. Little story attached to that. When Amy and I were walking Gobion's Wood, we were walking along the path and we saw what just looked like someone had thrown some orange peel on the ground. But then we looked close and we realised, no, that's not what it is. It was a mushroom. And it does like to grow on disturbed grass, gravel and soil. And so that's why we found it there. You could find them in along well-used woodland paths, growing clusters. It's just this bright orange, quite appetising looking colour. But please don't actually take mushrooms.
Now, the next one is one that I do love the name of, the jelly ear fungus. I'm trying to think what a jelly ear might look like, but perhaps you can tell us a bit more about that.
I always think when you get the really big specimens, those, they look like the BFG's ear, you know, like his ears, Roald Dahl's character, these massive flappy things and just absolutely huge ear-like discs. And you'll generally find those on the bark of elder and beech trees. and they're wrinkled on one side and smoother on the other, and it's got this kind of slightly freaky gelatinous texture. When you see them, they just look like troop up the sides of trees or fallen logs, and you see all these ears and you suddenly feel like they're listening to you.
Yes, and let's follow that slightly spooky theme with the even more spooky sounding dead man's fingers, which are, well, yeah, not the lovely bright colour of some of the things we've spoken about, are they?
Yeah, that's the thing. We have mushrooms and fungi that are really bright, beautiful colours, but then we also have the darker side of them. Dead man's fingers, as you can imagine, they're as creepy as they sound. They're like zombie fingers that come out. And because they come out in clumps, you'll have so many of them that it can look like a hand coming out of the rotting tree stump that you're looking at, or the decaying wood. And you'll find them in the dank places of the woodland, the dark, creepy places. You know, I've seen them in various places. Gobion's Wood was really good for them. And they're great this year at the moment there. And places like Ellenbrook in Hatfield, that's the first place I saw them.
They really can look very finger-like, can't they? Just amazing the forms that fungi can take. And again, another slightly creepy one, the black witch's butter.
So that is, it's like this, I don't know how to explain it really. It's just, yeah, so jelly-like in wet weather, and it has like this greasy texture to its surface, but it's less noticeable when it's dry because it will just become like the sort of crust. But yeah, you want to see it when it's wet because it just looks like this massive, I don't know, like brain matter, these lumps of black jelly stuff. And there's also a yellow version very similar as well. And it's just, yeah, just these sort of, oh, I don't know, like I can't think how to explain them. You have to see them to believe
that. You know, it's amazing, isn't it? Just the variety of forms and colours and textures, all of them just absolutely, absolutely fascinating and beautiful or grotesque, but just wonderful to see. So these fungi just look so enticing. But can you just give us the guidance on picking or disturbing them?
I think if you are going to forage, you really need to either have known from your childhood what was safe and what was not and have that expertise, or you need to go with someone who is an expert. But we really do please ask that you don't actually pick mushrooms from our nature reserves, because they're so valuable to wildlife. And if you have misidentified it, such terrible things can happen, can even be fatal. And I would also add to that, because they're so important for wildlife, if you're taking away from that ecosystem, you're not giving that fungi a chance to reproduce potentially, and you're going to impact its life and then impact the wildlife that relied on that and the trees that relied on that. And ultimately, they're so beautiful to look at. Please let other people have the pleasure of seeing it as well.
And given the importance and the beauty of fungi, I just wondered, is there anything that we can do in our gardens or open spaces to encourage fungi there?
Yeah, I think ultimately it's about letting nature do its thing and not keeping places like that too tidy. Like let the fallen leaves be, like leave them there, because that will encourage fungi. Also, rotting wood is great for a lot of fungi. So maybe make a little wood pile, let that rot away, see what happens, see what beauties you could bring to your garden. And don't see them as a negative, scary thing. They give so much and they're such a pleasure to behold, and you're helping nature, the wildlife and the ecosystem by doing so.
Chloe, thank you so much indeed for telling us about that.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
And if you'd like to see more from Chloe, then find her on Instagram at Chloe Valerie Nature Art. Or you might be interested in her beautiful book, The Secret Life of a Woodland Habitat. You can find it along with other beautiful wildlife books on the White Owl website, or find it on Amazon. So, as Chloe says, do look out for fungi. Do take and share photos of fungi, but please don't pick or eat them. And better, how about having a go at growing your own fungi at home? You don't even need a garden, just somewhere warm and dark. There's lots of advice online on how to grow various sorts of mushrooms and plenty of websites where you can buy what you need to get you started. And better still, why not help the charity Plant Life with their Citizen Science Wax Cap Survey? Although we hear less about threatened species of fungi than we do animals or plants, sadly, fungi face all the same threats. Now, Chloe mentioned how beautiful and brightly coloured wax caps are, and Britain is home to some of the most important wax cap grasslands in the world. However, many species are becoming rare and declining, so they need identifying and protecting, which is why your help is needed. Waxcaps are essential to nutrient-poor ancient grassland that's avoided the addition of artificial or other fertilisers and where the grass remains short. Now, as with other fungi, whilst we can see their glossy red or orange mushroom-shaped fruiting bodies, the main part of the fungus is under the soil, releasing nutrients that allow the plants in the habitat to grow. So they're an essential part of that ecosystem. So if you search for wax cap survey online or go to the link that I'll put in the notes that go with the podcast of this show and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. All you have to do is download the Plant Life app, visit a grassland site where wax caps like to live, any grassy area in a park or even your own lawn or a graveyard, for example, and then report what you find. And of course, as with all citizen science, you don't actually have to find anything. Now, I found it fascinating learning a bit more about fungi this week. I didn't realise that apparently certain types of yeast, which of course are also fungi, are used in the manufacture of cocoa, and it's what gives it its fruity taste. And whilst I knew that penicillin came from a mould, I didn't realise that there's a large group of antibiotics that are derived from the acrimonium moulds that are used to treat MRSA and other multi-drug resistant bacterial infections. We definitely wouldn't want to be without them. Now, it would be great to see your fantastic fungi photos or to hear your fantastic fungi facts. You can get in touch via email. I'm on amanda.yorworth@mix926.com or look for Environment Matters on Mix92.6 on Twitter and on Facebook. I'll be back with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.